of the first daf of Maseches Megillah. And in Maseches Megillah, we learn about when each of the various communities are expected to lay in the Megillah. And as we mentioned last week, 2 weeks ago, that depending on if you're a big community, a small community, a walled community, or a non-walled community, that is going to determine whether or not you're going to read on a particular day in the month of Adar. There is a time when you are allowed to read until, there is a time when you're only allowed to start reading, and the Mishnah expressed which days of the month of Adar are legitimate and which ones perhaps are not. In the context of that conversation, we got into a side discussion, which was a very interesting and important one, about when a Beis Din is going to institute some kind of takana, when they get something off the ground, ein Beis Din acher yachal levatal divrei Beis Din chavero. A later Beis Din that comes along does not have the right to repeal an earlier enactment, an earlier takana by a Beis Din, elam kein gadol heimenu b'chachma uv'minyan, unless they are greater than the first set of Talmidei Chachamim, b'chachma, number one in wisdom, and b'minyan, they also have greater numbers. What does it mean, greater numbers? Does it mean the number of scholars, or does it mean the age of the people who are making this halachic decision? So that's a discussion in the Rishonim. But anyway, we got into a conversation about who is allowed to argue and who. And I think this is a very important discussion, especially for our community, especially for our generation, where everybody feels that anyone has the right to argue on anybody, just because we could do a Bar Ilan search and find some interesting Mar Makomas that make us sound like Talmidei Chachamim, myself included. And the question is, where do we draw the line? Who really does have the right to argue on who, and who perhaps does not? And I think this is a very, very important discussion. So last year, we had a get-together here in February in the shul that I put together for rabbis. We had about 70 rabbis came from all over the country. And I invited Rav Asher Weiss to spend the day with us and talk about a number of topics. It started at 9 o'clock in the morning. It went till 6 o'clock in the evening. And we had a whole day of sessions that were geared for rabbis. And one of the sessions that I asked them to talk about was this issue. Who has the right to argue on who, and what qualifies you to argue on somebody else? And I think it's important for our contemporary society to be well aware of what those guidelines, what those boundaries are. What we printed was something that was much bigger than this. This is just the beginning of the conversation. I don't know how much we can get through tonight, but I think it will be of interest to everybody. Number one, just understanding what the breakdown of Torah Shebaal Peh is all about, who came when, and who has the right to argue with who, and what the status of the Shulchan Aruch is, who decided that the Shulchan Aruch is the bottom line of halacha. Maybe there were others in his generation who were worthy of an opinion and who should be considered. In fact, this morning I spoke about the Maharshal, whose yahrzeit is actually this evening. His 444th yahrzeit turns out to be this evening, Yud Beis Kislev. So the Maharshal lived in the same generation as the Rama and the Beis Yosef. And the way the Rama describes his relationship with the Maharshal, he talks about him as if he assumed that the Maharshal, Rav Shlomo Luria, was even greater than he was. So the Shalah HaKadosh, who was a Talmud of the Maharshal, writes that he believes that, yes, the Mazel had it that the Rama and the Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Kaur, were the two personalities that took over the halachic system as we know it, and Sfardim followed the Shulchan Aruch and Ashkenazim followed the Rama, but he says, how can we just disregard the Maharshal? After all, in his own generation, they felt that he was greater than everybody else, so how could it be that the Hashgacha had it that the Maharshal is disregarded? And that's why the Shalah writes, a Yari Shamayim will try as much as he can to satisfy the opinion of the Maharshal whenever it is within one's ability to do so, even though it's not quoted on the pages of Shulchan Aruch. So I think those are all very interesting issues and an important topic specifically for today, when there's such a lack of appreciation for what the Gemara says, what the Rishonim say, and everybody feels they have the right to reinterpret Gemaras, to reinterpret Psukim, and to give their own understandings, which are totally against so much of what we believe in and so much of the Mesorah that we have. I think this issue is one that should be important and interesting for us. So let's begin with the following. I have no Chidushim to share tonight other than this that I helped put together a little bit, and I think this is really a curriculum that should be taught to children in school, because it's it really gives an appreciation for everything that we believe in and all that we follow. Yeah. Right. As I said, I really don't have much to add to this, but I think it's fascinating to read through it together. Hinei yisod musad hinichol chachamenim zechrono levracha. The chachamim worked on the simple assumption shehadoros harishonim hayu tovim u'gedolim mehadoros ha'achronim. that the earlier generations, the assumption we always have is that the Rishonim were greater than the Achronim, and that the Amoraim were greater than the Rishonim, and that the Tanaim were greater than the Amoraim. In fact, you look in the Gemara, and very often you have a discussion in the Gemara where one opinion says this, one opinion says that. The Gemara says, how can you say that? Don't you know there's a Mishnah that says against you? So what do you mean? The Amora can respond, what do I care what the Mishnah says? I'm allowed to have my own opinion. I'm a great Talmud Chacham. I've mastered a great wealth of knowledge in Torah, and I have a right to say what I feel. What do I care what the Mishnah has to say? What kind of question is that? How can you say your opinion? The Mishnah says not so. Who cares what the Mishnah says? The answer is, we work off of this assumption that what the Mishnah says is going to stay as is. You want to come later on and have your own discussion, well, it has to fit in with all the Mishnais. And if it doesn't fit in, that's a problem. So that is the assumption that we work off of. Number one, we assume that that's the case with regard to the fact that they were closer to God than we are. We also assume that their mastery of Torah knowledge was much greater and far more comprehensive than ours today. We find this in many places in the Gemara, which we won't go through all of them, but number Aleph. Amar Abzeira, Amar Rabba Barazimuna. In Rishonim b'nei Malachim, he makes a comment in Maseches Shabbos, Kuf Yubeis Amud Beis. If the Rishonim were considered like Malachim, Anu b'nei Anashim, then we are a notch down beneath them, and we are considered like children of human beings. Vim Rishonim b'nei Anashim, if we look at previous generations as children who emanated from human beings, Anu kechamorim, then we are considered to be much lower on the totem pole. We are like animals. Don't think that that means you're like the Halige horse. The Gemara has the famous story about the Chamar of Rab Chanina Mendoza, Rab Pinchas Ben Yair, that were able to do all these tricks, and they had Nevuah, Ruach HaKodesh, whatever it was. Well, that's not what we're referring to. You're like the donkey, the bottom of the totem pole, because you're nothing in comparison to previous generations. And that's what the Gemara teaches us in Shabbos Kufiyud Aleph Amud Beis. Skip down to number Gimel Amar Rabbi Yochanan. We have another statement, another comment that's made in Meseches Yuma Daf Tes Amud Beis, where the Gemara tells us, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Tova Tziparnan Shel Rishonim, the fingernail of the Rishonim is greater, Mikreso Shel Achronim. Now, the main body of a person is the stomach. So the Gemara is assuming even the smallest, most insignificant part of what the earlier generations were is greater, so much more overwhelmingly greater than anything that we have today. That's what the Gemara statement is. Amar le Reish Lakish adarabba. So Reish Lakish says, really, is that true? Are you telling me that previous generations are greater? Achronim adifi. Don't you see that we're greater? Later generations are greater. Afagav di'ipas shivud malchiyos ka'aski b'torah. Why are we greater? Because we have the internet nowadays, and we have so many distractions, and life is so much more complicated than it ever was. Can you imagine halavai? We wouldn't have to work so hard, and life wouldn't cost so much money, and we wouldn't have to pay tuitions, and we would have a Beis HaMikdash. Everything would be great, and we would be learning so much. Everything would be amazing, but we don't have that. We have so many challenges, and yet we're still learning Torah. We're coming out late at night to come to a shir. Says Reish Lakish, doesn't that show that we're greater than previous generations? What was so hard for them? So the Gemara responds, Amar le biro tochiach. The Gemara says, no. It must be that they're greater. Why? Biro tochiach means, what does that mean, bira? Bira is the Beis HaMikdash. The building will be the proof. Shechazra le Rishonim velo chazra le Achronim. After all, in previous generations, they had the merit of having a Beis HaMikdash, means obviously they were greater. And we have not yet been able to have enough merit to get it back. So it means, says the Gemara, that they were obviously greater than we are today. Shalus Rabbi Elazar. So they asked Rabbi Elazar the question, Rishonim Gedolim or Achronim Gedolim? What's the bottom line? Do we assume that previous generations are greater because they did what they did? Or do we assume that future generations are greater because with all of the temptations and with all of the difficulty that we live with today, we still learn Torah? Answers the Gemara, Amar Lahem, look, where was the Beis HaMikdash? In previous generations, they had it. Our generation, we don't. That means that our generation is far less important, far less impressive than the earlier generations were. So these are two of many, many Gemaras where the Gemara has this sort of sentiment that we work off of an assumption that previous generations were greater, were holier, were more learned, more thorough, more comprehensive than later generations are. Hareilan. So you see from this, Hanachi Yesodus Ubrua Sharadaris Arishonim Tovim Hayumin Achronim, Bein Baruch Abdaitam Valibam, both in terms of their encyclopedic knowledge and their understanding of the Gemara, Ubeimitzid Kusam Uvidve Kusam Akadish Baruch. Vahanachi, Bottom paragraph on this page, Aleph. V'hanacha hi, and this hanacha is the yisod haklali l'chol binyan ha'alacha. If you don't believe in that foundation, if you don't believe, if you don't agree that previous generations were greater than we are, then the whole halachic system doesn't get off the ground. How do we build a sugya? How do we build a discussion today? Let's say you have a very difficult sugya that you need to discuss, you need to figure out, difficult shaila. So you start with the psukim in Chumash, and then you go down to Rashi's commentary and all the other Rishonim, and you move down, after you understand a clear understanding of what the psukim are teaching you, you move down to the Mishnayos, you try to understand that, you move down to the Gemara, then you look at how the Rishonim understood that sugya, then you go to the Acharonim and the Shulchan Aruch and all the Nosei Kelim. But if you don't have that foundation, if you don't believe that everything that came before you is pristine, is pure, then why would you start from all the way on top of the chain? There's no reason to. How can you ever have a binyan ha'alacha? How can you ever have a system as we have it today if you don't work off of this most fundamental underpinning? When we come to try to deal with the modern day shaila, so we have something that comes up that troubles our generation, mekablim anu kamuvan me'elav, we take it for granted, shehakodim bizman kodim b'mayla. We take it for granted that the Gemara will never disprove what it says in the Pasuk, and a Navi would never say something against Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Amoraim in the Gemara accepted all of the words that the Tanaim set forth before them. And certainly the Gaonim and the Rishonim did not disagree with Gemaras either. Turn to the next page. It's written in a very easy language, and I think it's enjoyable. I hope so. So this was always the understanding, he writes. Our understanding always was that we don't have a right to disagree with the Rishonim. When can you disagree with a Rishon? Now, you got to have big shoulders to disagree with a Rishon, but you can disagree with a Rishon when you find another one of the Rishonim that says like you said. So you can say, I prefer Rashi's Pshat as opposed to Tosis because I have Rashi on my side. Not because I made up my own idea, not because I have something that nobody ever said, and therefore I think I'm more correct than anybody else. Now, I mentioned before that this evening is the yahrzeit of the Maharshal, and I spoke about it earlier today. The Maharshal was fascinating in that regard. The Maharshal was one of the early Achronim. He was in the times of the Ramah, and he had absolutely no problem at all disagreeing with all the Rishonim. So you'll notice if you go through the Maharshal, I don't know how many people here learn the Maharshal, but he has very important works on many areas of Shas. So the Maharshal in some places writes that he thinks the Rambam made a mistake. It's amazing what he writes. The Rambam has a letter to his son where he encourages his son that he should learn the Ibn Ezra on Chumash. Okay, not such a bad idea. Why not? He thought it would be Mechazikim and Amuna. So the Maharshal who came after the Rambam, the Maharshal was an Achron, the Rambam was a Rishon, the Maharshal writes, Sharele Murray, God should forgive the Rambam for saying such a thing. How can you tell your son to learn the Ibn Ezra? The Ibn Ezra was a philosopher, and what he says is not at all within the Masorah, and what he preaches about his commentary on Chumash is not at all anything that should be followed. And like, it's amazing how he calls out the Rambam for giving a pretty simple etza to his son, that I think you should just learn Chumash with the Ibn Ezra. It's not such a crazy thing to say, but the Maharshal goes crazy at the Rambam for even suggesting such a thing. And in other places he says, look, I know that I'm not as great as the Rishonim, but Yiftach Bedora Kishmul Bedora, and I am a great leader of this generation, and therefore I have to voice my opinion the way I see fit. And therefore he says, even though I'm saying something that is against what Rashi says, and the Rambam, and the Rabbeinu Tam, and the Rif, and the Rash, and the Ran, I'm still going to say what I say. And he writes, I hope they won't come and crush my skull as a result of what I'm saying, but I have to say it anyway. So we do have certain personalities throughout the millennia that felt the liberty to do so. But in general, that was not the accepted opinion. In fact, the Noda Behuda, who lived 200 years after the Maharshal, writes that this is something that took his surprise. When you look through the Svarma of the Maharshal, who does he think he is? He disagrees with all the Rishonim. And the Noda Behuda writes, it seems, Shalibo Kelev Ha'ari. It seems that he had a heart that was fierce like a lion, and he had no problem taking anybody on. Interesting, if you know the personality who's writing this, and you've ever heard his style of speech, it's often something that takes people by surprise as well, that he also takes on many of the great Achronim. He does it with sometimes with great humility, but still he voices his own opinion. So that's what he writes over here. This is always the assumption of the later generations, that we give a certain sense of deference to earlier generations. Look at the next paragraph. V'yadua mashakasa Rabbeinu Yishaya Mitranai. Third paragraph on page Beis. It is known what Rabbeinu Yishaya Mitranai, who is the Tosas Rid, so he's one of the great Rishonim, Sheshama mifilosofim nachrim, that the way he understood this concept, this idea, this principle, that we do not disagree with previous generations, he said something from the philosophers. And what was that? He said, Mashal l'nanas harochev al tzavari ha'anak. This is comparable to a midget who is sitting on the shoulders of a big giant. Sheroa rachok yoser min ha'anak shal ksefav hu yoshev. Yes, you're right. You might be the giant, but I'm sitting on top of your shoulders, so I can see even further. So it's true, I'm not as big as you are, but I'm sitting on top of you. And he says, V'kach anachnu hananasim, he says, us, these small midgets, lifamim meitivim liros min ha'anakin. He says, sometimes we are able to see further than the great giants were able to see before us. Why? Because we are standing, we are sitting on top of the foundations that they built. So they were great individuals, they were great people, they got us to a certain point in our understanding of Torah, and now that's our starting point. We don't have to work hard to understand the Gemara, we have all of Rashi and the Rambam and the Rabbeinu Tam, we have all of their foundations that they laid for us, and now we go on top of them. He writes from the philosophers, the Tosas Rid says, sometimes we have the ability to see even further than the Rishonim were able to see. V'kach anachnu hananasim lefamim meitivim liros min ha'anakim shal kisveim anu rochvim, because we are on the shoulders of these giants. Umi be'er tarasam anu shosim. Ubal Shibali Aleket, another one of the Rishonim, writes in the Hakdama to his Sefer, this mushal of the Tosas Rid in the name of the philosophers. Ubal Megillas Esther b'Akdamaso al Sefer HaMitzvos Tzitet es Divrei HaShibali Aleket. So this was a very well accepted position, that although we assume that the Rishonim were greater than the Achronim, and that the Tanaim were greater than the Amoraim, there is a concept, there is this idea that, yes, they are greater, but in some way, sometimes we have a greater ability to be mechadish. Sometimes we have a greater ability to see further into what the Ratzon Hashem really is, into what the understanding of Torah might be, because we're working off of all the foundations that they have built for all of us. And surprisingly, this is a comment that's quoted in the Rishonim, as we mentioned, from the non-Jewish philosophers, which is interesting. Right? That's what he writes. This is something that Shashama mifilosofim nachrim. He heard this from the Greek philosophers that felt this was a concept that one should think about when learning Torah. Ki mashal zechaviv haya agadoli Yisrael sherehivu oz al af anvusunusam lachlok al kodmeyem. Even though, yes, we have great humility and trepidation when we try to disagree with those who came before us, there still is this perspective. And then he writes that Rabbeinu Zrachi Halevi, who's the Baal Amar, had his own formulation of the same mashal. That's for the rest of the page. You can read it later on. But it's a very similar mashal he quotes from the Chavos Ya'ir and others, who also had this idea that although we assume the Rishonim are greater, we do have this concept that in some way we might have the ability to see further than they were able to see. Turn to page Gimel. V'ayinot b'hakdamas ha-Chavos Ya'ir ha-Chavos Das b'sifra ha-gadol shekasa b'signon acher, that he also has his own formulation. Shadavka gedoli olam shesakras kala tarakula biskira achas be'eni habedolach. The great luminaries of the generations who were able to see the entire painting, the entire backdrop, the picture of what kala tarakula is, be'eni habedolach, with clarity, lifamim lo samu lev lepratim aktanim. You know, sometimes you have a CEO of a company. He doesn't know about how much toilet paper is in the bathroom. He doesn't know, it's not a right example, but he doesn't know the minutiae of the company. He doesn't know import, export, how many are going in, how many are going out, how many caps do we need to order in order for the product to work, how many screws do we need. He's not following this. He sees the big picture. He understands the product that we're trying to get out is X, Y, or Z. He needs to have smaller people underneath him to try and figure out how we're going to do it, and to try to understand and keep an accounting of what we need and what we don't need, and how much do we have, and what is the intake, and what is the export. So the same thing over here. Writes the Chavos Das, the Rishonim had such a panoramic view of all of Shas, that very often their view was able to be like the manager of the company. They were able to see the overall view of what the Ratzon Hashem is. But when it comes to the details, not always were they able to see the minutiae the way we're able to see it. V'lefamim hakatan hamerakes es mabato. Sometimes when we focus our attention on those smaller details, when the Rishonim set up the whole backdrop for us, and we just fill in the details, he says, we do have a place to fill in those details because very often it was not filled in. And it's true. When you read the writings of the Rishonim, it's not the same as the way the Acharonim wrote. You know, you don't have to use your fingers to explain the Rishonim usually, right? Usually...
The other way also,
that what?
That the details are something that the Rishonim understood and didn't have to explain, where we don't understand all the details and therefore we have to get into it. So
it could be. That could be.
It's the same concept, but just...
In the opposite direction. Yeah, that could be. I just think it's a very true point that the Chabad Das writes, that that when you read, just by reading the terminology that the Rishonim use, it's glot. Everything they say is clear. Like, let's say you read the Balei HaTosis. What?
It was self-evident.
Everything was clear. It wasn't so complicated. What did Rabbeinu Tam do? Rabbeinu Tam had the Balei HaTosis. What was the great contribution of the Balei HaTosis? The incredible contribution that they had was they put together all of Shas. So you're reading a Gemara here. It seems very nice. They point out to you that 10 Masechtas later, you have something that goes against what it says over here. So if you have a panoramic view of everything, you're able to do that. So now we get stuck in all the details. Oh, what exactly do they mean? We're Madaik and everything, but that's not the way the Rishonim spoke. So Reb Chaim's terminology and the Brisker Rav and the way all the modern-day Achronim talk is not at all the way the Rishonim spoke. It's very different. There's a reason for that. Writes the Chavos Das, because the Rishonim saw the bigger picture. Now, later on in our generations, we're left with room to figure out the details. How do you plug it all in? And how does it actually work out? So that's a very different task. Hareilan, so he writes, you see from here, signo not shonim, you see there are a number of different ways of expressing shekasir abaseinu harishonim ha'achronim, liyashiv es hastira ha'gdola. Dimitzad echad, on the one hand, omdim anu b'hachna v'hisbatlus mul hadras go'onam shel kadmonenu. On the one hand, we stand with humility to the word of those who came before us. Umeidach, but on the other hand, danim anu b'divreim livnos v'listar, we have the ability and we have the obligation and the right to try and understand to the best of our ability. Umefakvikim anu b'hachra'os samachokim aleim. We also can take it apart and understand it the way we're supposed to understand it. That doesn't take away from our respect, from our deference that we show them. It just means we have a different perspective in our generation. Why, like the Tosas Rid writes, sometimes the midget who's sitting on top of the shoulders of the giant is able to see far more than the giant himself was able to see on his own. V'lulei divrei makdoshim hayanira, la'anias daiti pashut. And he says, without all that we said, I would have said the following. Da'af shetziporum katnu rachava. Even though it's true that the Rishonim are much greater than we are, Harishus Nesuna v'Afachova Ladan v'Lachlo Kach Hi Darka Shel Torah. He says the answer to this is, even though yes, we agree that the Rishonim were great and they were much greater than we will ever be, and the Tanaim were much greater than the Rishonim ever were, we still have an obligation to delve into the depths of the Torah as best as we possibly could understand it, and to try and come up with our understanding. And at times, the answer is not always going to be found. The right answer is not always found in the one who's the genius and the one who's the smartest in the room. Sometimes the simple person in the room comes up with the right answer. Not every time that you have a strategy meeting at work is it the genius that comes up with the answer. Sometimes it's from an unlikely source. And therefore he writes that we have been given that opportunity to understand Torah as best as we can, although at the same time we always do it with a tremendous amount of respect that we accept all that came before us. Okay, so skip down to the next part of this, which is Ha'im Ha'amoraim Yecholim Lachlok Al HaTanaim. Are the Amoraim allowed to disagree with the statement made by the Tanaim? V'Ha'im Efshar Lachlok Al HaTalmud. Do we have the ability to disagree with something that is mentioned in the Talmud Bavli? So you'll say, well, in the Dain Elamasha in Avros, we know that Yiftach Bedor Kishmul Bedor, every generation's Talmidei Chachamim are given the tools to understand the Torah as best of their ability. So maybe it means if I understand something differently than the Gemara, I have a right to disagree. Well, why is that so outlandish? It makes sense. So let's see what he says. No one should walk away and think that's the conclusion. But this is the question. Kasav Rambam writes the Rambam, Bezdin HaGadol Shadarshu Ba'achas Miyud Gimel Midos. When you have the Bezdin HaGadol who makes an interpretation based on the Yud Gimel Midos, Mashanir Be'enem Sha'adin Kach V'danu Din, and they say, based on our understanding, this is the Halacha, V'amen Acharein Bezdin Acher, Now a future Beis Din in a later generation comes along and says, V'nira lo tam achar listeroso, they undo everything that was assumed by the previous generation. Harezeh so servedan kefi mashanira be'enav. They have a right to undo, to repeal everything that was done by the previous generation, Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, Ela shofet asher yia bayamim ahem, ein chachayv lelechas ela achar Beis Din shebedorecha. We have to listen to the Talmidei Chachamim of our generation, which is a major problem in our generation. What's the problem? My father has so many contemporaries, or those who are the same age or a little bit younger, who were enamored by the leadership of Rav Soloveitchik. And he was what to be enamored by. He was an amazing personality. After he passed away, they say, we have no one we can ask a shaila to anymore. Come on, you're not Rav Soloveitchik. It's true. It's true that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was not Rav Soloveitchik, and it's true Rav Herschel Schechter is not Rav Soloveitchik, and it's true many of the greats of our generation are not the same. But that doesn't mean that we don't listen to them. It means that Dar Holech V'Darba, it means Talmidei Chacham pass away, and it means God gives us a gift in the next generation of new people. And they might not be the same, they might have different talents, they might have different ways of understanding things, but it doesn't mean that now that your leader passed away, you just do whatever you want, which is a lot of what took place in the modern Orthodox community in the last 25, 30 years, because people were not willing to accept the leaders that came after him. That's a major problem. So the Rambam says, every generation has an obligation to follow the leaders of its generation. So the Kesef Mishnah asks the following, bottom paragraph on page Gimel, V'im Tomar, if that's true, Im Kain Amailo Pligi Amaray Atanai, if that's true, that every generation is supposed to listen to the greats of their generation, and a later generation who says that in earlier Beis Din made a mistake in their understanding of a halacha, we're supposed to listen to our generation's understanding, then ask the Kesef Mishnah, how come there's an assumption that a Tana is, whatever he says, goes, and a Namura would never disagree with him? Why? When the Gemara has a discussion, two Amaram have a machlokes, and one asks a question on the other, I have a Mishnah that's against you. So what? What's the question? And an Amor can say whatever he wants. He has a different understanding than the Tana. What's the problem? I think it's a very obvious question. How do you draw the line, ask the Kesef Mishnah? How do we ask, mi masnisin o mi braisa, how do we ask an Amor a question from a Mishnah, vitzarech lomar, and then he has to start twisting himself to say, no, I meant this, I meant that, and the Mishnah does fit with me. What do you mean? He says, I don't understand. So look at the last line. Ve'ef shalomar, halfway through the last line, it could be, Shemiyom chasimas ha-mishnah. From the time that the Mishnah was completed, kimu v'kiblu, it became a mesorah, became a kabbalah, like an unspoken rule, shedoros ha-achronim lo yichalku ala rishonim, that we are not going to touch what was stated by the Tanaim. Not because the halacha states that way, it was just a general understanding in the community. Now we're the generation of Amoraim, and this is a Kabbalah we took upon ourselves, that whatever the Tanaim said is what they said, and you cannot go against what they said. And he says, that was the understanding at the time of the Amoraim, that whatever the Mishnayah said is what they said, and that was also the understanding once the Gemara was written. Shemiyom shenechtema, once the Gemara was completed, once it was sealed, lo niten rishus l'shum adam lachlok aleh. Even though it's not based on anything, even though there's no halacha that states that way, even though the Rambam says if a future generation comes along and has a different understanding, really we should be listening to the future generation who lives in our times, but he says this was like a communal understanding, unspoken rule, you do not disagree with the Tana, and we do not disagree with the Gemara once the Gemara was completed. Va'adayin lo yadanu, we still do not really understand matokef kabbalah zu. What does that mean? There was an unspoken rule. Who's bound by that rule? So we weren't alive at the time that the rule was discussed. So that means we don't have to follow it. It means we have a right to disagree. V'im yesh ba kedei lishlo l'sicholto shel amora lachlok al divrei echam me'atanoim u'lisalei me'kabbalah sakamonim shelo lachlok aleim. So now every amora has to follow that rule that doesn't really come from anywhere. We just made up a pact between all of us, Amoraim, that we're not going to disagree with those who came before us. What binds us to that rule? Where does it come from? And he says, maybe this was like a takana. They got up in the times of the Amoraim and they said, we are misakin, this is the halacha, that no one's allowed to disagree with the Mishnah. Maybe that's what it means. Go to the next paragraph. Achidush gadol, that sounds like a very big chidush. They made a takana? Like the same way you have to keep Chanukah and Purim, they also made a takana that you're not allowed to disagree with the Tana. Sounds very strange. So he gets into a whole discussion here exactly how do we fully understand what exactly it means that they took upon themselves this unspoken understanding that no one's ever going to disagree with the words of a Mishnah. Okay, it gets a little bit complicated. You can read it on your own. That's why I gave it out to everybody. Turn to the next page, page Hey. Ubabir advarim, three paragraphs in, Ubabir advarim nira lanias daiti bazeh. So he explains as follows. Al pidikduk bedivre haramam shakasav. If you look carefully in the Rambam, look what the Rambam says. If you have a bezdin va'aman achareim bezdin acher, you have one bezdin in one generation that comes along and makes a takana, makes a decree. Now another bezdin comes along, v'niralo tam acher listar oso, and they say, we have a very compelling argument to make why we disagree with the previous generation. Harezes soser v'dan kifim ashanir v'enav. They have every right to do that. Hare, what do you see from the Rambam? Shetzarach listar es divrei bezdin harishon kedei ladun din acher. The only way you can repeal something that was instituted by an earlier bezdin is if you listar. What does it mean? You completely destroy that which they said. You uproot the svara that they had in the takana that they made. And he writes, v'chalod eno soser es das hakodmin. If you're not able to undo the logic of the previous generation who had this idea, ein biyado ladon v'lifsok shelo kamoso, then you don't have the ability to disagree with him, which makes a lot of sense. So what does it mean to be soser? So let's see. Look at the next paragraph. V'hanacha pshutazu, if that's true, hi amavteach lahavin pesher adavar, we can understand why it is that the Amoraim did not disagree with the Tanna. Exactly what you were just asking. De gedolei ha'amoroi hisbonenu, because the great Amoraim thought, v'higiu lidei maskana, they thought long and hard, and they came to the conclusion, sherechokim heim kol kach mimalas ha'tanoim, that they were so distant, they were light years away from the understandings that the Tanaim had in all the areas of Torah, ad she'efsher she'klal lo yardim heim l'sof daitam, ve'ein heim omdim al sod havanasam. If we're so far away from the understanding that the Tanaim had, the depth of understanding that they had in everything that they said, how can we disagree with them? You can only disagree with someone if you have a complete understanding of what they're saying, and then you say, well, I understand your side of the argument, but I disagree. Then your disagreement makes sense. But when you're not even in the same stratosphere, then you don't even get to first base, because you don't even understand the depth of what it is that they said. So if you don't even begin to understand it, how can you argue? It's like I would go to a lecture by Albert Einstein, I would start to fight with him. You don't even begin to understand anything about physics. How can you disagree with me? You don't even get to first base. That's as silly as it is. So the Amoraim took it upon themselves, not because this was a takana, but rather because the Rambam says the only time you have an ability to repeal something that was said by an earlier Bezdin is when you can be soser what it is that they say, when you can contradict and destroy the svara that they said. But if you didn't understand it in the first place, it's like Schechter getting up against Einstein and disagreeing with his theory of relativity. It doesn't make sense. How can you even think of doing such a thing? It makes no sense. So where do you draw the line? So that's a good question. Where do you draw the line? And that's what I see. We're not going to have time to get through all of it tonight. I don't know. Is this of interest to people to learn a little bit more about this in the future? What? So this is a. So that's an important question. Let's say you draw the line. You say, look, the Tanoim were the Tanoim, and the Amoraim felt we can't disagree with them. So where do we draw the line? So I can argue on Reb Chaim? Maybe. And where do you say Yiftach Bader Kishmul Bader? Let's say I feel the Shulchan Aruch is dead wrong. Can't be. It's impossible. The Shulchan Aruch is wrong. Do I have a right to disagree on the Shulchan Aruch? He was not a Tana. Yeah.
So what made the first Amora and the last Tana?
Are you saying where's
that line of demarcation?
It's an interesting question. So the Gemara says that, let's say Rav, the Gemara says that Rav very often was like somewhere in the middle. The Gemara says Rav Tana Hu Upalik. So Rav was in some ways considered like a Tana, and in other ways he was like in the generation of the Amoraim. Not sure exactly where you draw the line. It's a question also, where do you draw the line between Rishonim and Achronim? Not so clear. What?
Obviously.
Yeah, everything.
Each stage.
Yeah, I think as history developed, it became clearer who was who. I once asked my father, so what are we today? So what did he say? No, the Achronim already were. So what are we? He said, we're the Tachtonim, the underwear. So he said, we're the nothings, you know, we're the nobodies. Anyway. Yeah. Yeah. I think this is a very complicated problem. But again, what the Kesem Mishnah raises is such an obvious question. It's clear that the assumption of the Gemara is Tanoim are Tanoim and Amoraim are not allowed to disagree with them. So the Kesem Mishnah just states the obvious. He says, why? Who said that? So whatever explanation you're going to say, you have to come up with something. And that's what, if you read later on your own time, if you read what Rabbi Chanan quotes from Rabbi Chaim, there are suggestions that try to explain it. And it's interesting to go through it and to really understand how the trajectory of Jewish history and halacha really developed. It's fascinating, in my opinion. But it's not so clear to really define what the rules are. And that's why I think this was a very important work to publish this. I don't know why it wasn't published publicly. It was only written specifically for our group. So I guess you're... By extension, you're part of the rabbi group that we had last year here. But it's a great piece. I think it's a great piece because it's very important for us to really understand how the Mesorah of Halacha actually was developed and what exactly took place when all this was playing out. Sorry? Yeah. Right.
So as we go forward, we don't even, I mean, there are machlokas what happened in Beis HaMikdash 70 years later among Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi, what were the procedures? So in other words, people forget what with time, what happened in the past, and what was the problem.
Right.
So as we go forward, you know, people who were closer to the source, they knew more.
That's true. At the same time, we have... Correct. That's one perspective, which is what the Gemara says, like we started off the piece, that the Gemara says, Tovet Ziponu Shal Rishonim Ekresim Shal Acharonim. That's true. But at the same time, we also have the mashal that the Rishonim give, that you have the midget sitting on top of the shoulders of the giant. So we do have some deeper understanding than previous generations had.
You can, but if you don't remember a simple halacha, what was in the Beis HaMikdash, how they behaved,
I mean, it's just a lack of clarity.
They have to use their logic and inferences and so forth to try to figure out something that people just knew that they knew.
They took it for granted then, right? Correct.
At the time.
Yeah.
What do you do in halakha masorah?
So where do you draw? That's the question. That's the general question. Where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line? Turn to the bottom of page Vav. Let's just read a little bit more. It's almost 10 o'clock. I don't want to keep anyone too late. Let's turn to the bottom of page Vav. Kayotze b'zeak farkasav ha-Noda b'Yehuda. The Noda b'Yehuda writes in the tshuva the following. Bottom paragraph. V'yu dvarim elo chakukim aluach libecha lezikaron haklal hagadol. She'en l'chol chachamim she'achar ha-Talmud. Rishus lomar davar neger ha-Talmud. The Noda b'Yehuda says, the same way that the Amoraim took upon themselves that no one's going to disagree with the Tanaim, so too writes the Noda b'Yehuda, no one who comes after the Talmud has a right to say, Dover Negeda Talmud. No one has a right to say anything that's against what the Gemara says. Certainly, like in our generation, when they say a Pasuk in Chumash isn't even to be taken literally, right? So what do we have nowadays? We have rabbis getting up today saying, no, the Torah didn't really understand homosexuality, and that's why the Torah says that it's a toeva. Had they only been living in our times, they would know that that's not really what it's supposed to be. No, the Torah did understand it. And if we don't have a right to disagree on Tanaim or on Amoraim, we certainly don't have a right to misinterpret or disagree with a pasuk that's explicit in Chumash. Now, the Torah doesn't say you should be mean to those people. The Torah doesn't say you should go and kill those people. The Torah just says, in its perspective, what? For somebody who acts out on it. I think there's a major discrepancy and there's a lack of understanding from people in our generation who don't realize that when the Torah says it's a toeva, it means somebody who acts upon it is considered mitu'av. It doesn't mean that a person who's either born or who develops a certain inclination and has a taiva, is now considered to be a disgusting person. That's not what it means. That's not what the Torah says. The same way someone who is Mechal Shabbos is considered to be a Toeva, so too somebody who does other things is considered Toeva. But we certainly don't have the right to misinterpret a pasuk and to disregard it. That for sure we don't have a right to do. So over here, writes the Noda Behuda, this is something that is chakuk aluach libecha. He says a person always has to remember when going through the system of understanding halacha. Number one, he says, like we understood that the Gemara has an assumption that an Amora is not allowed to argue on a Tana. And the same goes, he says, once the Gemara was sealed, once the Gemara was written by Ravina and Ravashi, we don't have a right to say anything that is neged Talmud. V'ha'omer davar lister kutzo shal yud midivrei ha-Talmud. Anyone who says anything that is against even the slightest notion of what the Gemara says, lo yichashe bechlal chachmei Yisrael. You're out. You say something that's against what the Gemara says, you're out. We don't even consider your opinion. It means you're not even discussed in the conversation. Va'amnam. Kishanu motziyem echam nichachmei Yisrael ha-muchzak b'tar b'yira. When we know somebody who is so well known and so prominent to be a Yirei Shamayim and to be somebody who has such encyclopedic and mastery of Torah knowledge, b'li safek shekasav sefer davar hasoser ledivrei haTalmud, and you find that such a person who is well documented as one who is muchzak b'chachma uviyira, and he writes something in the sefer that seems to be against what the Gemara says. Chayavim anu l'mishochnei nafshin l'taritz devarav shelo dibe rak l'sha ola mishpacha pratis v'divrei haTalmud heim al haklal. You have to work very hard to explain why it is that he would have said such a thing. So if you have somebody who you never heard of who writes something against the Gemara, he writes, just disregard that person. Don't even think about it. Don't waste time. But if you have somebody who has a track record of being a muchzak b'yerushamayim, and somebody who is known to be a great leader of the generation, and he writes something that is against a premise that the Talmud has, there, explains in Nadi Yehuda, you're going to have to really work hard to figure out what it is that he meant, and why it is that he said what he said, and how we fit that into the general understanding that no future generation has a right to argue on something that is mentioned in the Gemara. So this, I believe, is just the beginning of the conversation about where we draw the lines between Tanoim, Amoraim, and after the Gemara was sealed. What we'll have to get to, if this is of interest to people, we'll have to continue the conversation about, look at number Ches, Im HaRishonim Yecholim Lachlok Al HaGaonim. So what happens? After the Chasimus HaTalmud, after the Gemara is completed, we come to a time where we now have the Tkufas HaGaonim. We now have the Gaonim, who came right before the Rishonim. So what is the status of the Gaonim? You know, very often you have in the Gemara like a passage that seems to be stuck into the Gemara that wasn't in the original text, and it's from the Gaonim. So the Gaonim like overlapped a little bit with the end of the Amoraim, and they came before the Rishonim. And the question is, well, once the Gaonim said what they said, do the Rishonim have a right to disagree with them, or does this principle keep going from one generation to the next? And the same way the Amoraim took upon themselves that they're not going to argue on anyone that came before them, and the same way we took upon ourselves, like the Nadi Behuda writes, that we're not going to argue on the Gemara, so did that trickle down to the next generation that Rishonim assumed they weren't allowed to disagree with the Gaonim? And Mirtz Hashem will continue with this next week if people want to. I think it's an important discussion.